I'd like to read for you a passage from a book that was published in 1959. In fact, I shouldn't have told you when it was published. You'd have thought it was published maybe yesterday. It begins, "For the past 200 years, people in technologically advanced areas of Western world have added a greater and greater proportion of animal and butter fat to their daily diet. During the same period, degenerative diseases, particularly those affecting the heart and blood vessels, have been on the increase. Until today, they constitute, in the United States, our greatest health hazard. With me tonight is a man who knew back in the 1950s and probably the 1940s the connection between the rich Western diet and heart disease, cancer, multiple sclerosis, obesity, all the problems. And think how many of your friends and relatives died unnecessarily because this man was not heard in a timely fashion. He served as the head of neurology, the division of neurology of the University of Oregon, for 22 years. And there he put together his ideas on diet and the treatment of multiple sclerosis. I'd like to welcome to our show Dr. Roy Swank, one of my heroes. Dr. Swank, it's good to have you on the show again.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
How did you get interested in the connection between diet and disease? This must have been a real rare doctor back in those days that suggested diet had anything to do with disease. I remember when I trained in the 1960s and 70s that the idea that diet had anything to do with disease was considered unorthodox if they were being kind, and they called me a quack if they weren't. But here you were talking about it 50 years ago.
Well, to begin with, I accidentally spent about 5 years with two very top-notch nutritionists at Harvard during the time that I was there as a house officer at the Peter Bent Brigham. I became very interested in diet. I did some fundamental work in some of the B vitamins and in pantothenic and pyridoxine deficiencies. So when I went to Montreal and was asked to do something about multiple sclerosis, I naturally looked at the dietary factor as well as other factors. At that time, you know, it was thought that the disease developed in the northern, in the areas where it got colder, in the northern part of this continent, and in the southern part of the South America. And it seemed possible to me that this could be a matter of food, because the further north you go, the less vegetarian life is led, and the more people are carnivores, you might say. They spend a lot more time eating meat.
But what I was taught in medical school, and what my brother and brother-in-law, who just finished their training, were taught in medical school, is the reason that things change as you leave the equator and head toward the poles is because of changes in magnetic currents.
Well, that's one of the things that was considered, but I didn't think that was very likely. I thought it was possible that it was had something to do with diet. And about that time, this is right after the war, and the United Nations had been evaluating food all over the world, trying to figure out just how much food would have to be furnished so that there would be no starvation in years to come. Well, one of the things they did was to determine the amount of protein, carbohydrate, and fat, and also the unsaturated fats as well as the saturated ones, and the vitamins in all foods. And this was figured out on the basis of how much a person would require per day. Well, when you took those figures and also took what we knew about the incidence of multiple sclerosis at that time, and had two columns, a column with low incidence of multiple sclerosis and a column with high incidence of multiple sclerosis, it was surprising to find that the areas with high incidence of multiple sclerosis were also the areas that consumed more than 100 grams of fat a day, whereas those areas where the incidence of multiple sclerosis was very low, they consumed less than 50 grams of fat a day. From there I went on.
If I remember some of the studies from World War II, and they could have been your studies, I mean, I've researched, read your work for years. It also said that during the war, in occupied countries, countries occupied by Germany where things were tough, food was scarce, people with multiple sclerosis fared better. And what I was taught in medical school is multiple sclerosis is a disease of emotional distress. And what more distress could somebody be under than to have Germans occupying your country, incarcerating you, shooting you, and yet they were getting better during these times. Is that true?
That is generally true. And this happened in Norway, and it also happened in Denmark. There were also groups who had been held in German prison camps for years and had been fed on an extremely low-fat diet. And these groups, there was 5,000 from Denmark and 10,000 coming into Switzerland from Austria. And within a short time, within a year of coming into being repatriated to Denmark or to Switzerland, they developed a number of cases of multiple sclerosis. Whereas in the previous 3 to 5 years in the prison camps, they had not developed any of these diseases.
So you took this this bit of information that you got from watching the geography and comparing it with the disease incidents and what people ate and the changes that took place. You took this back to Montreal and started actually treating people with a diet?
That's right. We decided that the case was pretty good, and therefore we had to have set up a study so that we could actually feed people on low-fat diet and see how they did compared to those who just ate the standard diet. And that's what we did.
And you've been doing that for years, and you're going to tell us the results. When I talked to you a couple of days ago, you told me that you were even more excited, even more convinced that a low-fat diet was the way to treat multiple sclerosis and that people with this disease can rejoice. They don't have to look to beta interferon or any other fancy medications. The solution to the problem is in their own hands. Do you really feel that way, Dr. Swank?
Well, I feel very strongly that way. The figures from the Montreal group, which we followed for 35 years, if a patient, there were 25 patients in that group who were early cases and had no disability when placed on diet. Of that 25 patients, five of them did not follow diet, and they rapidly went downhill and died. The other 20 patients did follow the diet very carefully. One of them died from another disease, and the rest of them remained exactly the same as they were when they started. In other words, no additional disability. However, they were 35 years older, so there was a bit of enfeeblement which developed.
And Dr. Swank took his work to the University of Oregon, and where he served as the head of the Division of Neurology at the University of Oregon Medical School for 22 years and has published his results in the major medical journals, has written a couple of books that we'll talk about. And Dr. John McDougall here with more information for your good health. It was written in 1959 in a book called The Low-Fat Diet, with recipes, by the way, by Dr. Roy Swank. He said, gluttony and chronic degenerative diseases have been linked in the minds of both laymen and scientists for many years. The saying, to dig your grave with your teeth, probably has its origin in antiquity. But in the prosperous areas of Western world during the past decades, the maxim has taken on real and tragic meaning. I just have to know, Dr. Roy Swank, I'm working this this ground here in the 1990s trying to get people to make dietary and lifestyle changes, and here you were beating your head against the wall back in the 40s and 50s. What was it like back then? Did the other doctors have any clue at all that diet had anything to do with disease? Was there any interest at all back in the 1940s and 50s?
There was no interest, and I was more or less considered as a quack. And the problem to me is I've wondered why it is that people feel that the doctors themselves feel this way. And I haven't come up with a kind of an answer that I could publish at the moment, but there is a there are probably a number of ones, and I suspect that one of them happens to be economic for the simple reason that it doesn't cost much to take care of yourself and eat a highly vegetarian type of diet.
How old are you, Dr. Swank?
I'll be 86 in 2 months.
And you are in fantastic shape. If anybody had the privilege of meeting you and being with you, they would certainly love to have the physical appearance and the mental state that you have at 76, much less 86. But you took your ideas back in the 1950s from University of Montreal. How in the world did you get a job at the University of Oregon as head of the Department of Neurology?
I was also doing some studies of the circulation in which I was feeding fat to the animals and to man. And one of the men at the University of Oregon at that time was interested in what I was doing. And I think that that overshadowed what we were doing as far as diet and MS was concerned. They thought there was some good in that, and particularly the cardiologists. And the first book which we published, the one you mentioned, was published at the request of the secretary here of the American Heart Association in Portland.
So they really brought you on board because of your work in blood circulation. And if I recall, back in my training, which was back in the late 60s, we had something called the Swank filter. Is that associated with Dr. Roy Swank?
Yeah, that's mine.
And that we used this to try and clean out some of the blood impurities that were giving people emboli and all other kinds of problems.
That's right. We developed that in 1960.
But that's the thing that you really don't want to... I know you made a considerable amount of money on that, but that's not what you really wanted to be known by, is it?
No. No, that was an interesting, and that was really a byproduct of what we were doing in the studies of MS. We were very interested in blood viscosity at that time as a possible basic cause of the disease. And we ran on to the fact that there were these emboli floating around and that they could be removed by the filter.
Well, how'd you cause the emboli to occur in terms of diet? You figured out that that a change in diet or certain types of dietary components would result in the blood sludging, and the oxygen content decreasing, the circulation becoming terrible. What kind of dietary things did you discover back then?
Well, we found out that a heavy fat diet, saturated fat diet, caused all of these things you've just mentioned.
Can you kind of describe what really happens? How would you describe to a person what happens when they eat a high-fat diet in terms of their circulation if you looked at it under a microscope?
Well, very slowly, the red cells begin to appear sticky and stick to one another. And as time goes on, at about 3 hours after the meal, they become very sticky. They aggregate together and form clumps. And these clumps are large enough and tough enough so that they can obstruct circulation in small capillaries. And that goes on throughout the body. And we could see those changes in histological sections of the brains of animals. And we also could demonstrate that after these animals had been fed this very high-fat diet, that there was also a breakdown of the blood-brain barrier in some of the animals. And we could see tryptophan blue, which we had injected into the venous system, leaving the blood vessels and going out into the tissues of the brain.
We were always taught in neurology that the lesions of multiple sclerosis, the destruction that occurs in the brain and the nervous system of a patient with this disease, is perivascular. It occurs around blood vessels, so it makes sense that the injury comes from the vessels. And your thoughts, and they were then, are they still the same, that this injury is due to the sludging of the circulation?
Well, I think so. We have to figure out some way of breaking down the blood-brain barrier. And one of the possible ways, probably the best-known possible way, is the presence of aggregates, small emboli in the bloodstream. Aggregates might be one cause, and the aggregates are red cells due to fat intake, or aggregates are caused by adhesiveness of platelets and leukocytes. And these can both obstruct small blood vessels, cause breakdown of the endothelium of these vessels, and therefore allow elements within the vascular system to leak into the central nervous system, and also elsewhere in the body, for example, in the lung.
Yes, but also the implications of this are even greater. I mean, think about the heart. Patients who have narrow heart arteries, they get chest pain, they get heart attacks.
That could all come from it.
Little strokes.
It has been demonstrated by somebody in Pennsylvania, rather. I can't think of his
Dr.
name
Peter
right Quo. Now.
And Dr. John McDougall here with information for your good health. The name of the book is the Multiple Sclerosis Diet Book, A Low-Fat Diet for the Treatment of Multiple Sclerosis. You can get it in your bookstores. The author is Dr. Roy Swank. The book you can't get in your bookstores is the one that I read all the time. And there's just too few copies of this around. It's called The Low-Fat Diet with Recipes. It was published in 1959. And from that book, we have the following. All of the really great feats of physical endurance in history have been accomplished by men who from infancy have consumed a diet containing very little fat. The great conquests of antiquity by Alexander and his Macedonians, and the conquest of the Mediterranean by Romans were accomplished by men consuming chiefly grain, fruit, vegetables, and wine. How about that? Caesar's legions complained when they had too much meat, preferring to do their fighting on corn and other grains. Boy, did I tell you. Understanding of good nutrition certainly is not something of the man of the 20th century. But Dr. Roy Swank understood this, the importance of diet in terms of multiple sclerosis and the treatment of multiple sclerosis. We've got lots of people who want to talk to you. The number is 707-270-1350 if you'd like to get in during this hour to talk to Dr. Swank. But just briefly, before we get to the callers, Dr. Swank, I mean, what happens to somebody with multiple sclerosis if they do not follow a healthy diet?
Well, they continue to have exacerbations for until they begin to have to become quite disabled. They may have double vision or blindness at one time or another, and there's always usually a partial recovery from this, but then these things reoccur, and they become quite severe. And they have difficulty walking, they'll get to the loser balance, they'll be very clumsy and incoordinate, and they'll have numbness and tingling, sometimes burning of any part of the body. These things go on and on, continue throughout the rest of their life, and the duration of the disease not treated is about 25 years, and the course is steadily downhill. In about 10 to 15 years, a patient will be confined to a wheelchair or bed and may live another 10 or 15 years, largely in bed.
Would it be fair to say, and you correct me if my quote is wrong, because this is what I usually say to people, is within 10 years, patients with multiple sclerosis, left untreated by the only thing that works, which is a healthy diet, will be either bedridden, wheelchair-bound, or dead half the time.
Yeah, that's true. There are a few cases that go slower, but then, for all practical purposes, what you're saying is correct.
All right, let's go to the telephones. John, welcome to Your Good Health. You're on with one of my favorite doctors, Dr. Roy Swank.
Yes, I'm an MS patient, and I guess I'm one of the lucky ones. I've had it for over 30 years before I became a vegetarian. I've recently heard that I should also avoid gluten. Do you have any feelings about that?
About avoiding gluten, Dr. Swank, he heard that he needs to avoid gluten to stay healthy. Do you think there's any value to that gluten?
I don't think there's any value to that unless you're one of these rare people who have a sensitivity to gluten.
Like celiac disease. But
yeah.
There are all kinds of theories that come out on multiple sclerosis. The idea is that you should take B12 shots and that will cure your MS, and that you should stay on gluten-free diets and that will cure your MS. But, you know, these people don't publish in the archives of neurology, the Lancet and the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition like Dr. Roy Swank did.
Incidentally, I have two patients with celiac disease in my group, and we've done very well, or they've done very well by avoiding gluten, but that's 2 out of 4,000.
And that's different than treating multiple sclerosis. I mean, people can have several different diseases.
Yeah, but they have multiple sclerosis as well as a gluten deficiency.
And so you don't see a connection. Does it trouble you a bit when you hear all these theories out there about how to treat MS?
Well, it troubles me, but I've gotten over that feeling because, you know, this is a disease which cannot be predicted. You don't know whether you're going to have trouble, and you don't know what the trouble is going to be. And people are willing to try anything, hoping that they will escape from this sort of unpredictable condition.
But your 50 years of experience has you convinced the way to go is with a healthy diet. I'm Dr. John McDougall, and I'll be back with more information for your good health. And Dr. John McDougall here with more information for your good health. With me is Dr. Roy Swank, medical doctor. He was the head of neurology at the University of Oregon Medical School for 22 years. He still has an association with the University of Oregon Medical School. It practices up there in Portland. As a matter of fact, I called him on Saturday, 9 o'clock in the morning. Got his house, said, is Dr. Swank there? And I assume it was his son, said, no, he's at work. He won't be back for about 10 hours. At 86 years old, what are you doing working on Saturday for 10 hours?
Well, there's certain things you have to do. and we are quite busy. We've recently moved, and so we have a new clinic out in Beaverton. And so we're just setting up and getting going, so there's extra work to do.
What's the number of people want to get a hold of your clinic?
520-1050.
Okay.
The area code is 503.
Okay, 503-520-1050. But I have to warn you, Dr. Swank is booked up for about 10 years. Is that right?
Not quite.
But almost. So you better eat well so you stay healthy enough to take care of these people when you're 96. Let's go back to the phones. Rob, welcome to Your Good Health.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of related questions. I am not very clear on optimum levels of vegetable fats in the diet from nuts and vegetable oils. I know a lot of people are advising low-fat diets, but I'm not real clear on those fats as opposed to animal fats.
So what do you think about the vegetable fats, Dr. Swank, in terms of your dietary program? Do you think
what we do is reduce the saturated fats to less than 15 grams, and that gets down pretty low. It's about a 90 to 95% reduction from what you're normally eating. we add on a little oil to make it, it makes it easier for the for you to reduce the saturated fats. And we also add a very little but some animal protein in the form of skim milk, occasional egg, and fish, and some white meat of turkey and chicken.
Well, do you find people having a little trouble interpreting what a little bit is, Dr. Schwenk? I mean, when you tell people a little turkey, little fish, little this,
oh,
little
no,
that.
No, we tell them how much.
And your patients are very disciplined, but mine aren't. I tell them a little bit, and a little bit becomes half a chicken.
Well,
that's why I don't tell them a little bit.
Well, yes, that's true. For this purpose, I say a little bit.
All right. And you have a question, Rob?
Well, I guess I'm just trying to get a little clearer. I've been vegetarian for quite a while, but I find that my diet lately especially has really increased in nuts and olive oil especially. And I'm a little bit concerned because I'm just not very clear on what optimum levels are and if you found that high levels of those oils are unhelpful.
I can help you in that. We have found over the years that the oils can be anywhere from 10 grams up to around 40 grams. That gives you a big leeway. It does, the oil itself does not cause any trouble at all. As a matter of fact, it's helpful. And I wouldn't worry about the oil. You can use as much as you want. And, of course, that's...
But how about somebody who's worried about their weight, Dr. Schwenk?
Then you have to reduce the oil because it carries too many calories.
All right.
So you just have to judge it that way. And the nuts, of course, are okay because of the oil content.
Okay, but they put them in hard shells so you couldn't get too many with your bare hands. Remember that?
No, that's true.
Yeah. Thank you for calling, Rob. And Karen, welcome to Your Good Health. Hello, Karen? We have Karen. You're on with Dr. Roy Schwenk.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Hi. I was diagnosed with MS almost 5 years ago, and I have no demyelination in my brain, but my diagnosis was based on a lesion in my spinal cord. Why do you project such a dismal outlook on MS? Because in my understanding, 95% of MS patients lead normal lives, and I've heard that if I have no exacerbations in 5 years, then I may likely never experience anything for the rest of my life. What is your opinion on that?
What do you think about those messages? I imagine they come from the very optimistic MS society, Dr. Schwenk.
Well, that's not what they're saying when they go out to raise money. They tell the truth or maybe even exaggerate it, but... I would think that not more than 5 or 10% of patients are the mild type that you're thinking about. I've had patients, for example, one patient I have in mind now, had blindness in one eye 20 years before I saw the patient, had no further activity, carried on normally, and 20 years later came down with a series of serious attacks and was disabled in a couple of years. So, you know, there's all sorts of things happen, but in 5 years, you do not have a very good idea of what's going to happen to you.
It's kind of like the optimistic message of the Cancer Society that if you make it for 5 years, you're cured, but we all know, if you look at the facts, that these are progressive deteriorating diseases. But there is a hopeful note here, Karen, and I hope you heard that. How about the hopeful note, Dr. Schwenk? What if somebody follows a healthy diet? And we're talking about a low-fat, particularly low animal fat diet. What's their chances, say, in 35 or 40 years of being in good shape?
95%.
95%.
95%.
That's what I figured. We followed patients that long, and that's what way it's turned out with our patients.
Now, that's pretty hopeful, Karen.
Well, I've read that the Mayo Clinic, which is the leading clinic on MS statistics, projects that no diet has been proven to help with MS. Is that because those doctors still consider Dr. Schwenk a quack because his study was with patients and diets was not controlled?
Listen, it depends on the... It's in the eyes of the beholder.
I
understand what you're saying, Karen, but let me tell you my point of view on this. Dr. Schwenk has studied over 4,000 patients for 40 years. He's published in the best medical journals in the country. There's not a single study that says his work is not correct. And it does you absolutely no harm to believe him. It's not like you're taking something that makes your hair fall out or makes you throw up for a month. It does you no harm to follow a good diet, and at least it'll give you a good bowel movement and cut your food bill by 40%. So, I mean, how could you reject such a philosophy?
It sounds good. It's a drastic change.
But living in a wheelchair is a drastic change, too.
That definitely is. And fortunately, there's nothing that guarantees what's going to happen or not happen. I guess my hope is the studies that they have been doing with the oil, and I guess that came out in the movie Lorenzo's Oil. Has there been any latest information or breakthrough in terms of that?
What do you think about just adding oil to the program, Dr. Swank, instead of changing your diet? In other words, take your steak and fry it in safflower oil.
Well, you'd be in trouble if you took the steak and fried it in anything else because of the fat content of the steak. That's all. I mean, the oil is added, you know, to our patients for two reasons. One is it makes it easier to stay on a low-fat, saturated fat diet. And second, we find it's helpful as far as skin, hair, and...
Keeps them warm and cuddly, too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's...
Up there in Portland, you got to be warm and cuddly.
That's right. Right you are. Karen,
thank you for calling. Your points are really important. As a matter of fact, Dr. Swank, I want to recall a story. About 8 years ago, I was in your office at the University of Oregon Medical School, and I asked you why, when I walked into the MS Society and asked them about your dietary program, they would respond with things like, well... it's not proven, or yeah, but nobody can follow that kind of diet. I ask you why it was that they didn't at least say, since it does no harm, cuts their food bill, and cuts the risk of cancer, heart disease, constipation, and so on, why didn't they at least say from the MS Society, and likewise every neurologist in the country, why didn't they say, hey, you know, you ought to follow this kind of diet. It may do you some good. There's certainly data that says it was. It's going to do you absolutely no harm. And then go on and recommend whatever they else would. Do you remember what you said to me when I presented that to you?
I've heard you say it several times. Go ahead, do it again.
You want me to say it. You're embarrassed to say it. You leaned back in your chair, you looked up at the ceiling, and you said, they didn't discover it. It was me. I discovered it in this little laboratory in this little university here, and because it wasn't with their research dollars, and I'm probably embellishing this a little bit, because it wasn't with their research dollars, they can't recognize it, and sad thing,
true.
ego. And it's Dr. John McDougall here with more information for your good health. And my guest, Dr. Roy Swank, he's up in Portland, Oregon. If you'd like to give his clinic a call, it's 503-520-1050. And they'll give you some help there. I don't know whether you'll have a chance to see Dr. Swank soon or not. The information is in the Multiple Sclerosis Diet book. It's a low-fat diet regime for the treatment of multiple sclerosis. It does work. This is the truth. There are a lot of gimmicks out there. Yes, this does take some effort for you to take control of your health and your diet, but that's what will do it for you. And let's talk to Marvin. Marvin, welcome to Your Good Health.
Hello. Hi. I listen to you every Sunday night, and Dr. Swank, it's really an honor and a pleasure to talk to you. I've been diagnosed for a little over 8 years now, and I probably had multiple sclerosis 10 years before that. And I'm on several medications along with beta interferon. I take Imuran, and I take prednisone every other day. And I was wondering I'm going to stop now and buy the book. I'm in my car, but I would like to start a program. And I was just wondering what I should get rid of first, or what I should do with all this medication I take.
Well, if you're going to get rid of it, I think you should discard the steroids slowly over
right.
a period of some months. And as far as the beta serum is concerned, our experience with it has been very, very grim.
Mine too.
That's the beta interferon. That's what the miracle is supposed to be for patients with MS.
No, it's not at all. It's caused remarkable disability in patients.
I have body sores now. I'm up to about 3 body sores. But my multiple sclerosis is also in my cervical spine.
Yes.
And that's why he said I'm in a wheelchair, which I just got into about 6 months ago, a year ago. I do walk on a walker roughly, but it's a tough, very, very little. It's a tough go, and I have a hard time, say, getting up and down.
Well, Marvin, it sounds like now's the time to change your diet. You don't want to get any worse.
I'm going to stop and get the book right now, and
okay.
I'm going to...
Thank you very much for calling. We certainly do wish you the best. I remember a television documentary you did. It was like a 60-minute documentary up in Canada where they compared cyclophosphamide therapy with the Swank diet. That was just that should be played for every MS patient in the country, in the world, to see what nonsense goes on in terms of high-tech drug therapy that hurts people, whereas a simple dietary approach results in tremendous benefit. That was quite a show they did. Let's go back to the phone. So many people want to talk to you, Dr. Swank. John, welcome to Your Good Health.
Hello?
Yes, you're on with Dr. Roy Swank.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. You're talking about diet and stuff, which I understand and I agree with, but how do you convey to someone you don't know or someone you meet when you get into conversations like this, how do you convey to them that, converting over to a better diet as opposed to traditional medical doctor medication types of things, what kind of language do you use?
How do you talk? Yeah, I want to know that, Dr. Swank. How do you talk somebody into taking good care of themselves?
Well, most of the patients that I see, and they come from all over the United States and Canada, but most of them I see have been referred to me by other patients who have also been on diet for some time. And the patients that come to me then are fairly convinced, just from observing the one who informed them of the diet, how well they've done.
It's word of mouth.
They're already impressed.
It's a word of mouth grassroots movement because there's no profit in it. And Sylvia, welcome to Your Good Health. Hello, Sylvia.
Oh, hello, yes. My daughter's got MS and she's so tired. She's just exhausted and they just keep telling her to stay in bed all the time. Is there anything they can do to take that tiredness away from her?
Fatigue sometimes is so great, it's actually frequently more disabling than the neurological symptoms that they develop. And sometimes it takes a long time, a long period of rest before a patient gets over this. But we do find that they do get over it to a large extent on the low-fat diet. But if the diet is not followed, then the fatigue will continue.
And Nancy, welcome to Your Good Health. Hello, Nancy.
Hi. I was diagnosed with probable MS about 1 year ago, and I'm a registered nurse, so I've done every sort of, read everything out there on MS. I do find that a low-fat diet helps me. But my question for you is exercise. I find that when I do exercise, I tend to tingle all over, and I've read that it's not good to do, and then I've read that it's okay to do.
Well, we recommend that you do some exercise every day, but that you limit it to the amount of exercise which will not fatigue you.
Uh-huh.
When you begin to develop fatigue, then you've gone too far.
Uh-huh.
And if you continue that, every each month you'll be able to increase the amount of exercise you take very slowly, then you will become stronger and you will have many fewer symptoms when you exercise.
Nancy, have you read about Dr. Swank before in your research?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's not a big surprise to you?
No, it's not. And I'm really very lucky because, I do and run and all that. But the question that I had was mainly about the symptoms getting worse while I was exercising.
And a good diet's a small price to pay to stay out of a wheelchair.
Right, definitely.
Thank you very much for calling us. Dr. Roy Swank, phone number if you'd like to get a hold of the clinic, and believe me, he's got plenty of phone calls, so if you don't want to write this down, 503-520-1050. But he's got a very friendly staff up there. Barbara and all the other ladies up there are just amazingly helpful because I'm sure they get such a thrill at making a positive difference in other people's lives, just like Dr. Roy Swank. And I'm Dr. John McDougall. My guest, Dr. Roy Swank, booked the Multiple Sclerosis Diet book. The phone number for the clinic up there in Portland is 503-520-1050. Dr. Swank, 86 years old now. What are you going to do for the next 10, 15, 20 years?
Well, I'm just going to hang in there.
just hang in there and help people get well, right?
That's right. I don't know what I'd do otherwise.
You just love seeing people every day, don't you?
Yes, I do. I surprise myself because I didn't think 20 years ago that I was going to enjoy it so much.
Yeah, well, when you're in the office on Saturdays and the rest of the days of the week, it has to be a work of love. and it's because the results. I one of the biggest honors in my life was to be able to honor you by giving the keynote address at the Multiple Sclerosis Society up in Portland, and to meet such healthy people. It's a direct consequence of your work.
Well, they are a healthy group, and they're very enthusiastic, and They enjoyed your talk.
Well, it was a real honor to know somebody that's made such a difference. And besides that, you're a leader. I don't have to take and fight all the battles. You've done the job. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
It's a real pleasure having you on the show.